Any other couple would have thrown away the former owner's things and moved in. But 2 months after buying the apartment at auction, Nick and I were still using it as a playhouse. The former owner's name had been Natalia. We had inherited all of her possessions, her pantry and freezer stuffed with food. Under the couch, she had wedged bottles of cheap red wine. Nick joked that we could survive at Natalia's forever. It's like our own private fallout shelter, he said, as we peeled back her bedspread and crawled under the sheets. We didn't concern ourselves with the circumstances of her death. We were young and in love, and the misfortunes of others had nothing to do with us. The flat had one bedroom, an office, and a narrow kitchen that opened into a long central room. Heavy drapes shut out the city view. The furniture was outdated, the Persian rugs threadbare and stained. The ceilings and walls had recently been spackled, leaving bone-white spots. On the buffet next to the dining table were stacks of postcards with paintings, many of them torn or chewed at the corners. We found a half-used bottle of anti-anxiety pills in the medicine cabinet, a glass accordion in a folded tablecloth, a baggie of foreign coins in a boot at the back of a closet. In a rickety piano bench, we discovered faded Polaroids of two girls at what looked like a family picnic.
Rachel, is there an overall arc of how you might describe these stories? For me, they tend to all have these quirky, damaged, yet strong survivor women in main roles. When you arranged them all, did you see a common theme?
I did. So when I was putting the collection together, I started pulling out stories. Initially, it was just stories that I didn't think were as strong. And then I noticed that there were some that were in conversations with each other. And in this particular story, it came out of a set of three stories that were all interconnected. And so that's why I think you're picking up on that theme in the collection as a whole, because it kind of radiates outward. Mm-hmm. So the original story that didn't make it into this collection was inspired by a single line from a Mary Ruffel poem. And it was, I had the sudden urge to eat postcards of famous paintings. Mm. And that was a challenge that a friend gave me when I was at Western Michigan University studying. She asked me if I could try to write a short story based on that line. And so I did. And then three more resulted as after doing that.
I understand many of these were written while you were a grad student at Western Michigan University. Was that an especially inspirational time for you?
It was in ways that I'm still kind of processing. You know, there was, I think what happened there was, it was a combination of things. I had, Jamie Gordon was my dissertation advisor, and I think she was the first, one of the first people, there were several others in earlier years, who kind of gave me permission to be myself. I think in the, before that, I was writing these sort of strange stories, and they didn't always go over well. And I was always trying to kind of tamp that down in my work. And but Jamie gave me, you know, that's what she loved about my work. And so I was able to kind of champion that instead of repress it. And so that was a big part of being at Western. And also it was just, I think, a time to really deeply read, because I was there, you know, as a PhD candidate. I'd never got my MFA. And so I was studying a lot of American literature, and then just the many different, other students that I met that I got to know and I'm still friends with now. All of them inspired me in different ways.
You know, your opening story, Felina, haunted me long after reading it. In fact, it still is. Her apartment, there's all these hanging clothes and odd art structures throughout. And especially when she has her date, Arthur, wander through in the dark. I swear I could feel that room. I could smell it, and it made me uncomfortable. Another one was the title story, in which a son, Nolan, can't quite figure out how to handle his mother Sigrid's rape that happened when he was a baby. These are stories that really stick with you. The last one, taking an assault from a perspective you wouldn't expect.
Yeah, so that story, that was a harder one for me to write, and I started that when I was at Western, but it was just in pieces, and I didn't finish it until later. And it came about because I had so many students that were writing serial killer stories.
Mm.
And I, you know, and a lot of them were pretty disturbing. And it was during, I think, the time when Dexter was really big. And so I challenged my students to try, if they were going to write that kind of story, to try to try it from a different perspective. And it didn't really work with my students, but and I think I had an argument, or not an argument, but a conversation with one of them. And, you know, the result of that was that I went home and tried it myself because it was, yeah. And so I wanted to write it from Sigrid's point of view. I wanted to write it from someone who had survived, because I really pushed back against that sort of victim perpetrator.
Yeah, those are the two perspectives you usually get. Either you're the perpetrator or you're the victim, but you've taken an entirely different one.
Yeah, and I found it very difficult. My student turned out to be right. You know, trying to write from a victim's point of view is just awful. It's really hard. And the only way that I could actually finally find a way to do that was to go into the point of view of her son. You know, that sort of, and that for me plugged into personal territory, because I think so many of us come from, you know, long lines of families, and, you know, just even historically, culturally in the country that we live in, there's this, you know, this sort of passed down trauma that we carry that we don't always fully understand because we didn't experience it ourselves. Mm. And so that started bubbling up in that story.
Do you prefer stories to longer prose, like, say, a novel, or this is just how it worked out for you so far?
I actually started out for many years. All I wanted to write were novels. And so I started in writing in my 20s on my own, and my novels would just go on and on. And so in school and in workshops, it's very difficult to workshop a novel. And I learned a lot through short stories about plotting, characterization. And so now I'm comfortable in short stories, but I've gone back to working in a novel form, and I have yet to get one that really, that is successful. And I hope that right now I'm getting close to that. So we'll see.
Intriguing, intriguing. So there is something in the works right now, a novel.
There is.
Oh, wonderful. And I suppose you're not going to tell us what it's about.
I think with this one, I've been working on it for so long, I'm getting closer, but I'm not sure, you know, if I'm close to the point of figuring out if it's going to fly or if it's going to have to be put in a drawer. So we'll see.
Do you have a lot of them in the drawer at this point?
I've got about 4 or 5 of them, and most of them are not good enough to go back to. I might go back to one of them and see if I can resurrect it. We'll see.
I think I've been working on one my entire life, and I'm not young anymore, and I keep rewriting it and keep, and I don't know if it'll ever get finished, you know?
Oh, that sounds like one that really needs to be finished, though. And you've had several that you have finished, so you probably have a sense that you can actually do it.
Do you get to a point, like when you're working on a story, that you end it and you know that's the ending? Or sometimes when I've written something, I think the ending is way out there, and then I get to a point much closer, and it's like, nope, it's right here. Do you have an outline or a finished idea that you work toward, or?
I wish I did. You know, I've done that. I've outlined, and I often will write a story. I usually write the first draft in one sitting, and then I spend about 2 years actually trying to figure it out.
There you go.
So, and you know, it goes through many, many revisions. And as I've gotten older, I tend to set them aside for longer. And then my revision process doesn't take as long, and I can figure out that ending quicker. But usually when I have a sense of the ending, it's a false ending. And I think endings are just so mysterious. I'm really paying attention to other people's endings right now, because I find that when you put them together in a collection, at least for me, you can start to see your own writing patterns and how you do some of similar things at the end. And so you start looking for other ways. So that's where I'm at right now. I'm studying new ways of trying to end stories, because I think there's so many.
You teach at the School of the Art Institute in Chicago. What do you teach?
I teach a freshman and junior, like a first year seminar is what it's called.
Oh,
and it's
okay.
A combination writing and literature course. And so each time I teach it, I choose a new theme and new books.
Are these would-be writers or people that you're trying to teach to read better, more deeply?
You know, it's a really interesting class. There are so many different kinds of students in it. It's all artists, or mostly artists, because it's at the School of the Art Institute. And I have a lot of international students, and I've got students who are very visual and some that are more verbal, and I've got, you know, would-be writers and, you know, students that are just kind of discovering that they are writers, you know, as well as, and combining that in interesting ways with visuals. And, you know, a lot of my students, actually, they bring in books for me and teach me.
Well, I was going to ask you that because I enjoy asking teachers that, you know, what do they teach you?
And for me, there's always something. And sometimes it's just, you know, new ways of experiencing the world. And for me, I'm so curious about younger people because, you know, they're experiencing so much right now. And their development is coinciding with some in very intense periods in history. And so, and also just having been raised in a digital era and, you know, where things are constantly changing, it's fascinating to me how they, and I'm putting everyone into one group, but it's very different from student to student, you know, how they experience the world. And as artists, I think it's really interesting. That's an interest of mine to begin with. Mm. And so, just learning this sort of visual mode of working and moving through the world is really fascinating for me.
Is there a lasting impression that you would hope your readers would take away from this collection? Do you think about your reader at all while writing or maybe after you're finished?
You know, I do think a little bit about my readers as I'm writing, but that's something that's still developing for me. I try to set that aside, but as I was putting the book together, I thought about it more and more. I've been thinking a lot about, you know, as I read, because I am such a reader too, that, you know, that books are a gift and that stories are a gift. And if I accept that as true, then what, you know, I have to think about the things that I'm giving to the reader. And a lot of these stories are fairly heavy, even though I tried to put humor in as well and some lightness, but I'm definitely thinking about, you know, how I'm making the reader feel. And I don't want to be too upsetting. And yet I want there to be a lot to think about and for there to be ideas and to not shy away from difficult topics. And so I'm thinking about entertainment versus, you know, just the kind of, thrill and, intellectual qualities of writing. And those are things that I'm really working out right now for the next books.
You know, and this is a time that I ask my writers and artists that I talk to about creating in the time of COVID, because it's different. And you're in that place of having to launch a new book at a time when you can't get out there and shake hands and talk to people face to face and read to people. What are you doing for a book launch, which I think, well, by the time we air, you will have done that already. And how are you meeting with your public?
Well, for me, I'm in Chicago and I'm so lucky. We have all these independent bookstores here and a really fabulous community that rallies around the authors who have books coming out. So I'm lucky in that way. And I'm made the launch and the readings. I'm not doing as many as a lot of authors are. There's a local bookseller just down the street from me, the bookseller, that's CELLAR, and they do a lot of wonderful events, and they'll be doing a virtual launch with me, and I'll be talking to a really great short story writer who's also working on a novel now, Kate Wiesel, and she's from Boston, Massachusetts originally, and wrote this really wonderful collection of short stories called Riding in Cars with Homeless Men. And, you know, really gritty, short story collection about four different women. And so I'm meeting a lot of other authors online and, doing some different events. And also I think one of the things that I'm doing is just trying to be more of a reader and more of a supporter and more of a literary citizen. That's something that I haven't always been good about because I do tend to spend a lot of time by myself and, you know, teaching. And so, I'm trying to get out there more a little bit for other authors. And that's how I'm handling it.
Do you think there maybe there's an advantage or more than one advantage to doing things this way? What kind of responses are you getting from audiences?
I don't know that I can speak so much to the audience part of that because I've only done a few events, but the ones that I have done have been really wonderful. And I've had some moments where I've been able to connect with a very small group to teach a workshop. And because this time is so tenuous for so many people and there's there's so many people also really wanting to find a way to connect and to you know, be more creative themselves and to find some deeper meaning in what they're reading. And so it's bringing people to together in really unusual ways, and in some cases in surprisingly intimate ways. And so, and I've been hearing this from other authors who have been, you know, out there doing lots of events, for much of the year. And so, that's kind of what I'm hearing.
Well, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with our audience, Rachel. Much appreciated. And, maybe when we can all meet face to face again, you'll return to Kalamazoo.
I would love that, Zinta. Thank you so much for talking to me today, and the best of luck to you too with all your creative work.